My name is Aurora Nova. You don't know me, but you've probably moaned my mother's name. Nikki Nova, porn legend, tabloid queen, and my personal curse. I didn't ask to be born into her scandal or carry her legacy like a loaded weapon. But when the world refused to let me forget where I came from, I stopped running. I studied her power. I learned the game. And then I became something far more dangerous than her, calculated, controlled, and unafraid to burn it all down. This isn't just a story about shame or sex. It's about identity, revenge, and the high cost of becoming the woman they never saw coming. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you The Porn Star's Daughter. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Mommy Dearest Porn Queen. You ever look in the mirror and wonder who the fuck you really are? Not the version you post on social media. Not the bitch who struts through life like she's got it all figured out. I'm talking about that moment when the lights are off, when your makeup's smeared and your demons crawl up your spine like cigarette smoke, clinging to your hair, your sheets, your soul. That's me. That's where I start. My name? Irrelevant. For now, just know this. I'm the daughter of a porn legend. A fucking icon. The woman they still whisper about at parties, even though she's been out of the game for over a decade. You know the one. Blonde hair, silicone tits, lips like sin and a mouth that made empires crumble. Men worshipped her. Women hated her. And me. I lived in her shadow like a ghost. One foot in her spotlight, the other drowning in it. Growing up, the word mom never felt soft in my mouth. It tasted like shame and latex and moans coming through cheap hotel walls. Other girls had bedtime stories. I had bedtime headlines. Porn queen Tiffany Steele engaged to third husband. Steele's leaked video shocks industry again. I remember being 13 and finding a DVD under my best friend's brother's mattress. That glossy cover staring back at me. My mother in fishnets, bent over, her name in bold pink letters like it was some kind of fucking badge of honor. Do you know what it's like to realize half your classmates have jerked off to your mom? You can't scrub that off. It's under your skin, in your blood. I tried. God knows I tried. Burned every magazine she was in. Blocked her name on every search engine. Pretended I didn't hear the whispers in school hallways. There goes come princess. Bet she sucks dick like her mom. I didn't. Not then. But eventually, the shame turned into something else. Something darker. I stopped crying. Stopped pretending. Stopped playing the victim. I looked around and realized my life had already been written for me. The slut's daughter. The fallen apple. They expected me to fall. So I did. Only I didn't fall quietly. I fucking dove. The thing is, there's a twisted kind of power in being born from infamy. People want to see you crash and burn, but even more than that, they want to watch. They want to feel involved. They want to be inside the story. I learned that early. Started small. Older boys, professors, mentors who offered internships with their hands on my thigh. I'd whisper her name, let it hang like perfume in the air, and watch their pupils dilate like dogs hearing a dinner bell. You know Tiffany Steele? She's my mother. Boom. Suddenly I'm special. Suddenly I'm someone. At first, I used it like armor. A shield. If they were gonna talk shit, I'd give them something to talk about. But somewhere between the fake laughs and the real orgasms, I realized the truth. I didn't just carry her legacy. I could weaponize it. My mother fucked her way into stardom. Men wanted to be in her films because she made them legends. But me, I wasn't interested in movies. I didn't want fame. I wanted revenge. I wanted every single motherfucker who reduced me to her daughter to choke on that assumption. I wanted to make them regret every locker room joke, every silent nod, every time they looked at me and saw her. Because I'm not her. I'm worse. I remember the exact moment the switch flipped. I was 21, sitting in the back of some smoke-filled VIP lounge in West Hollywood. I had a glass of scotch in one hand and a lie curled on my tongue. Across from me sat Brandon Klein, gray hair, tailored suit, the kind of man who could make or break a career with a whisper. He was talking too much, smiling too wide, drunk off his own power. "You remind me of someone," he said, eyes glued to my cleavage like it held the fucking secrets of the universe. I leaned forward just enough to make his breath hitch. "I get that a lot," I whispered. "My mother's Tiffany Steele." The pause, the blink, then that grin, that greedy, perverted little smirk. I knew then. I knew. I had something no one else did. A loaded gun with no safety. Her name. And I was done letting it shame me. That night, I walked out of that club with more than a buzz. I walked out with a plan. I would use her fame the way she used her body, shamelessly, unapologetically, and with devastating precision. I would seduce the gatekeepers, manipulate them, expose their filth. Because believe me, Hollywood isn't built on talent or dreams. It's built on secrets, and I was ready to become the biggest one yet. They think legacy is something passed down like jewelry or real estate. But in my world, legacy is a curse, and I was ready to curse them all. Let them worship my mother. Let them remember her moans and her poses. Because soon enough, they'd remember me. Not for what I did on camera, but for what I did to them. Chapter 2, name-dropping like a loaded gun. The first time I used her name like a weapon, it slipped out of my mouth like a sin I didn't know I was capable of. I didn't plan it. I didn't rehearse it. It just happened. But once it did, once I saw the way the air shifted, the way the man in front of me paused, really fucking paused, I knew I'd never go back to hiding again. Let me backtrack. It was a Thursday night, early spring, warm enough for the scent of jasmine to hang in the LA air like perfume for the broken. My roommate at the time, Talia, had scored an invite to some underground mixer in West Hollywood. One of those half-social, half-business, entirely toxic kinds of events. She was a wannabe actress. Blonde, thin, big tits and a hunger that made men stupid. She wore ambition like a second skin. I didn't want to go, but I didn't want to stay home either. Not that night. I'd spent the afternoon binge-watching old interviews of my mother again, my eyes glued to the screen like they held some kind of forbidden code I hadn't cracked yet. I watched her laugh, flip her hair, suck up air like it owed her attention. She was so deliberate. Everything she said, everything she did, it all served a purpose. She was playing chess in a room full of horny checkers. And she always won. That night, I decided to try it for myself. I wore a black dress that clung to me like a second skin. Low-cut but not slutty. High heels, matte lipstick, smoky eyes. I didn't look like Nikki. Not really. But I understood how to channel her. I understood that seduction wasn't about sex, it was about control. It was about giving the illusion of permission while keeping the power. The mixer was at a rooftop bar called The Spill. Ironically named, since most of the people there had nothing to offer but spilled drinks and spilled secrets. It was packed with the usual LA types. Producers with spray-tanned foreheads, agents in overpriced sneakers, influencers who smelled like desperation and eucalyptus oil. I followed Talia through the crowd like a ghost in stilettos, eyes scanning for my first target. I didn't have a plan. I just knew I wanted to try something. I wanted to test my theory that her name wasn't a curse. It was a fucking spell. That's when I saw him. Mid-40s. Italian leather shoes. Crisp button-down, unbuttoned just enough to show a tan line and a hint of chest hair. Jawline like he paid for it, and probably did. Talking to two other men, gesturing with a confidence that dripped entitlement. His laugh was too loud, too polished. It was the kind of laugh that came from knowing how powerful you were in rooms full of people who needed something from you. I walked right up to him and interrupted mid-sentence. "Excuse me," I said, tilting my head just slightly, like I wasn't sure if I should be doing this. He turned, scanned me from head to toe, lingered on my legs, then my lips, then my eyes. "Yes, I think you might know my mother," I said. He raised an eyebrow. "Do I?" I nodded slowly. "Nikki Nova." Boom. It was like I'd cast a spell. His entire posture changed. Shoulders relaxed. Smile widened. Eyes flared with interest. His two companions drifted off without a word. Suddenly, it was just the two of us. And I had all his attention. "You're her daughter?" he asked. I nodded again. In the flesh. "Holy shit." He chuckled, shook his head. "Wow. That's something." I was a huge fan. I smiled, slow and measured. Most men were. He laughed again, but I could tell he didn't know how to process it. He was doing mental math, trying to figure out if it was appropriate to flirt with me, trying to remember how old I must be, trying to decide if this conversation was going to end in a lawsuit or a blowjob. "What's your name?" he asked. "Aurora." "Beautiful." "Thank you. My mom named me. Said I was born to shine." "Sounds like her." "Yeah, she was a lot of things." He raised his glass toward me. "To Nikki." I raised mine back. "To Nikki." We sipped in silence, the city glittering behind us. He kept looking at me like I was a fucking hologram. Like I was both past and future at the same time. I watched the gears turn. I watched his lips part, hesitate, close again. He didn't know what to say. He was caught between lust and guilt, and it made him vulnerable. Weak. And I felt powerful. For the first time in my entire fucking life, I felt in control of the narrative. He asked if I wanted to grab dinner sometime. I said maybe. He asked for my number. I gave him a fake one. He said I looked just like her. I said I was better. Then I walked away before he could find a way to turn the fantasy into reality. I didn't want to fuck him. I wanted to fuck with him. I wanted to watch him squirm in the fog of his own thoughts, wondering what it meant that he was attracted to the spawn of his favorite sex symbol. I wanted him to go home and jerk off to memories of Nikki while picturing my face instead, and then feel ashamed. That was the first taste, and it was delicious. After that, it became a game. A name drop here. A casual mention there. At networking events. Parties. Daytime brunches. I tested it on agents, D-list celebrities, indie producers, board writers. Every time I dropped Nikki Nova into a conversation, something happened. Doors opened. Voices lowered. Interest peaked. People who wouldn't have given me a second look suddenly leaned in. Their posture changed. Their smiles got wider. They wanted to know who I was, what I was doing, what my plans were. They wanted to know if I was in the business, and if not, why not? One producer told me I had the same eyes. Another asked if I was as talented as my mother. One asshole even said, "If you ever want to follow in her footsteps, I'd pay good money to be your first scene." I laughed, then spilled wine on his lap and walked away. The more I used her name, the more I realized it didn't matter who I was. I didn't need credentials. I didn't need training. I didn't need a resume or portfolio or even fucking talent. All I needed was the right face, the right dress, and that goddamn name. Nikki Nova. It was like a cheat code. It didn't just open doors. It dismantled them. And the men who recognized it? They were already halfway under my thumb before I even spoke. But the scariest part? It felt good. Too good. Manipulation became my new language. I studied it the way kids study for the SATs. Voice inflection. Eye contact. Body placement. Timing. I memorized the tilt of my head that made men lean in. The pause between words that made them hang on every syllable. The smile that said you're winning, even when they weren't. And I started to ask myself a very dangerous question. If I can do this, what else can I do? What if I stopped flirting with the edge and stepped into the darkness? What if I stopped pretending I wanted their approval and started taking their power? What if I became the kind of woman they feared? Not because I was loud, not because I was angry, but because I was quiet, calculated, unpredictable, unfuckable, in the sense that no one would ever fuck me without consequence again. I wasn't trying to become Nikki. I was trying to outdo her. She used her body to build a legacy. I was going to use her legacy to build a fucking empire. But first, I had to learn how to play the game. And to do that, I had to find the men who thought they were winning it. Chapter 3. Hollywood on her knees. People think Hollywood is built on dreams. It's not. It's built on lies. Sculpted in silicone, stitched in secrets, polished in PR smiles and filtered Instagram stories. It's a city that breathes manipulation and sweats desperation. You walk down Sunset, and it feels like everyone's pretending to be someone, selling something, fucking someone for a chance to be anything. You ever see a city high off its own bullshit? That's Hollywood. And I learned fast, if you can't beat the game, you become the game. The first few weeks after I started using my mother's name like a backstage pass, I felt high. Not like I smoked something, like I was something, like I was slipping into this velvet-laced version of myself that I never even knew existed. It was like putting on a dress made of power. Tight in the right places, easy to move in. Dangerous. Every room I walked into, I didn't just exist, I commanded. Not with volume. Not with charm. With mystery. With the implication that I had access to something sacred. Sinful. That somewhere deep in my blood was the echo of every orgasm that ever made men forget their names. That wasn't just attraction. That was control. And I liked it. No, I fucking craved it. I started keeping a notebook. Not for poetry. For data. I wrote names, locations, outfits, reactions. I tracked which heels made them stare longer, which lipstick made my smile feel more threatening. I took note of which version of me worked best with which type of man. The shy, coy ingenue. The sarcastic, guarded beauty. The unapologetic sex kitten with a bone to pick. It was like crafting characters for a movie, except every role was real, and every audience member wanted to unzip me with their eyes. And then came Travis Hale. I met him at a private party in the Hollywood Hills. You know the kind, where the ice is molded into tits, and the champagne costs more than your rent. Everything smelled like money and lies. I wasn't invited. I got in by saying I was there with Vaughn, a producer I had met once at a brunch and had ghosted me ever since. But no one questioned me. They never did. Not when I walked in wearing confidence like perfume. The house was massive. Cold. Walls full of art that meant nothing. Girls everywhere, young, too young, smiling like they were trying to prove something. And men. Older, leering, leaning just a little too close. It was a masquerade without masks. Everyone knew the rules. Pretend you're special, fuck who you need to, and don't ever ask for love. Travis was in the corner by the bar, sipping whiskey like it owed him something. Salt and pepper hair, tailored suit, Rolex that caught the light when he reached for his glass. I knew who he was the second I saw him. Producer. Big one. Handled some of the hottest thrillers of the past decade. Made his fortune turning trauma into box office hits. I walked right up to him. No fear. No hesitation. Don't you usually play the brooding genius role from across the room? I asked. He looked up, mildly surprised, then amused. Excuse me? Travis Hale. Producer of The Forsaken, Dead Valentine, No One Lives Forever. Married twice. Divorced twice. Rumored to have a thing for brunettes with daddy issues. He grinned. You've done your homework. I like to be prepared. And you are. I leaned in. Aurora. Something flickered in his eyes. Then came the question. Last name. I smiled. Nova. Boom. There it was again. That pause. That moment of stillness where the air between us shifted like a loaded gun cocking behind closed doors. No relation? He asked, already knowing the answer. She's my mother. He took a sip, eyes never leaving mine. Wow. That's unexpected. Why? I asked. I didn't know she had a daughter. She didn't advertise me. I wasn't part of the brand. He laughed, deep, rich, too practiced. Well, you're quite the upgrade. Careful, Travis, I said, voice low. Flattery makes you predictable. He chuckled. And you? You're what? An actress? A model? Neither. I'm a mirror. He raised an eyebrow. Meaning? Whatever you project onto me, I'll reflect it back twice as clear. That's what you people want, right? Something you can mold? Rewrite? Cast? He studied me, eyes narrow but intrigued. You're sharp. Too sharp, I said. That's what makes me dangerous. We talked for an hour. Maybe more. Not about work. Not about me. About him. His films. His regrets. The one scene that got cut. The actress he should have cast. I let him ramble, let him feel seen. That's all men like him really want, validation disguised as attention. Then he invited me upstairs. I didn't go. Not because I was scared, but because I wanted him to want it longer. I touched his arm, smiled sweetly, and said, maybe next time. His eyes darkened. Possession. That old primal hunger that comes when men are told no by something they think they already deserve. And I left him there, burning. Over the next few weeks, I played him like a violin. Texts. Voicemails. Late-night video calls where I wore silk robes and whispered memories that didn't exist. I told him stories about Nikki, some true, most fake. I let him think he was unearthing something precious, something sacred. I gave him the illusion of intimacy while keeping every door firmly locked. And he gave me everything. Contacts. Meetings. Access. He introduced me to people with more power than morals. One of them offered to fly me to Paris for creative development. Another offered me an NDA and a penthouse suite. I declined both. But I took their names. Wrote them down. Because I wasn't playing for fame. I was building a fucking hit list. It didn't take long before the whispers started. Who is she? Where did she come from? Is she really Nikki's daughter? Does she act? Does she direct? Does she fuck? And I smiled. Because in Hollywood, the rumor is always more powerful than the resume. And I wasn't chasing a career. I was starting a war. The more they leaned in, the more I stepped back. I let their fantasies inflate, fill their lungs until they couldn't breathe. I became the ghost in every man's mind. The secret. The what if. The slow drip of obsession they couldn't admit out loud. And while they spiraled, I stayed silent. Watching. Learning. Preparing. Because I knew something they didn't. Hollywood doesn't belong to the powerful. It belongs to the patient. And I wasn't just here to play the game. I was here to burn it down and make them thank me for the fire. Chapter 4, Daddy Issues and Devil's Contracts. The first man I ever hated was my father. Not because he hit me. Not because he screamed or drank or cheated. He didn't even stick around long enough to earn those titles. He just left. One day he was there, smiling in old Polaroids, holding me with a stiffness that suggested he was already halfway gone. And then one morning he wasn't. No note. No goodbye. Just a pair of empty boots by the door and his cologne fading from the sheets. I was 4. I didn't understand abandonment then. I only understood absence. I understood that one half of the world I'd been born into had disappeared, and no one had explained why. My mother never said his name. Whenever I asked about him, she'd wave it off with a cigarette and a laugh. He was weak, she said once, flipping through a tabloid. Too scared to be in the same room as all this power. Couldn't handle it. And maybe that was true. Or maybe she broke him, the same way she broke everything she ever touched, including herself. But it didn't matter. Because in my mind, he became the shadow in the corner of every room. The voice I imagined when I made bad decisions. The ghost I screamed at in dreams. He wasn't a person anymore. He was a void. And I filled that void with hate. Hate and questions no one would answer. What kind of man walks away from his own child? What kind of man watches a woman spiral and decides it's easier to disappear than to help? What kind of man creates life, then acts like it never happened? These questions haunted me, shaped me, followed me into every room like static. I saw pieces of him in every man I encountered, especially the ones with power, the ones who made promises with their eyes and broke them with their silence. So when I met Grant Ellison, something inside me lit up. He wasn't just another producer. He was the producer. Old school. Untouchable. The kind of man who could make or break careers with a single email. A titan in designer shoes. Rumors said he once forced a director to scrap an entire film because the lead actress wasn't pretty enough to die for. Cold. Calculating. Charming in a way that was more venom than velvet. And 27 years older than me. Perfect. I met him at a charity gala hosted by an agency that funded young women in film. The irony wasn't lost on me. It was just a dressed-up meat market for rich executives to play savior in tuxedos and see which fresh-faced filmmakers would smile the hardest for a check. I didn't wear a smile. I wore blood-red lipstick, and a dress slid up the thigh like an invitation to sin. I stood alone by the champagne tower, letting men glance second-guess inch closer and finally retreat, unsure if I was worth the risk. Until Grant approached. He didn't flirt. Didn't compliment my looks. He studied me, like he was trying to decide whether I was an investment or a liability. Who invited you? He asked, eyes scanning me like a resume. I invited myself. That's bold. Boldness gets attention. And attention gets used. Not if you're the one using it. He smirked. What's your name? Aurora. Last name. I waited, let the silence stretch, then said it like a spell. Nova. That did it. His brow twitched. Just slightly. Enough for me to know that he knew. Of course he did. Grant Ellison was around during my mother's reign. Probably had a front row seat to her rise and her unraveling. Hell, maybe he even helped. Maybe he fucked her. Maybe he rejected her. Maybe he filmed her. I didn't know. I didn't ask. I didn't need to. Because in that moment I saw it. Recognition. And behind that, opportunity. I see, he said, voice cool. That explains the eyes. Careful. I replied. Flattery's lazy. I don't flatter. I observe. And what do you observe now? That you're not here to network. You're here to conquer. I smiled. Maybe I am. We talked. About nothing. And everything. Film. Politics. Sex. Feminism. Manipulation. We never touched. Never flirted. But the tension wrapped around us like a velvet rope. He asked if I was in school. I told him I was studying people. He laughed. A real laugh. Not the forced kind men use when they're trying to get in your pants. The kind they use when they feel seen, and maybe a little threatened. He gave me his card. I didn't call. Not for a week. When I finally did, I didn't say hello. I said, "Do you regret giving me your number yet?" He replied, "Not yet." And that was the beginning of my descent. Or maybe it was my ascent. Depends how you define power. Grant was different. Calculated. He didn't chase. He waited. Let me come to him. Let me think I was in control. It was psychological warfare dressed in manners and martinis. Every meeting felt like a negotiation wrapped in flirtation and dipped in danger. He didn't ask me to sleep with him. He asked me to prove myself. I don't hand out favors, he said. I reward potential. So I gave him potential. Scripts I didn't write. Ideas I didn't believe in. I pitched projects I knew he'd like. Gritty stories about broken women trying to reclaim power in a world that exploited them. Metaphors for myself disguised as fiction. He ate it up. We had dinners. Late night drinks. Private lunches at members-only clubs where men patted him on the back for mentoring me, and women rolled their eyes the second I turned away. And I loved it. I loved the whispers. I loved the jealousy. I loved the illusion that I had the upper hand. But deep down, I knew what I was doing. I was trying to find my father in every room he wasn't in. Grant became the canvas I projected every abandoned little girl wound onto. He was distant, withholding, brilliant, cruel. Everything my father might have been if he'd stayed long enough for me to hate him in person. So I seduced him. Not with sex. That would have been too easy. With attention. I listened. Memorized. Noted every crack in his armor, every insecurity. The way he hated his aging hands. The way he talked about his daughter like she was a stranger. The way he tightened his jaw when I mentioned men from his generation being replaced by younger, hungrier creatives. I became what he feared and desired. A woman too smart to be controlled, too damaged to be ignored. And one night, in the back of his car, he kissed me. It wasn't romantic. It was transactional. Like he was cashing in on a bet he hadn't realized he placed. And I let him. I let him think he won. That he cracked me open and found something soft inside. That he was different. But he wasn't. He was just another man. Another name on the list. And when I left that night, with his scent on my skin and my lipstick on his collar, I smiled all the way home. Because for the first time in my life, I had looked my father in the face and beat him at his own game. Grant thought he was mentoring me. But what he didn't know was that I'd already written the script. And in this story, the daughter destroys the father. Every single time. Chapter 5. Karma is a bitch, and so am I. I used to think I was unstoppable. That once I cracked the code, once I realized how easy it was to twist desire into currency and identity into performance, I'd be untouchable. Untouchable and unbothered. That I could walk into any room, spot the man with the most power, and make him want me before I ever opened my mouth. That every time I whispered Nova, I could feel the doors unlock before me like magic. And for a while I was right. Until he showed up. Until I met Bo Maddox. And suddenly the game wasn't so easy anymore. Bo wasn't like the others. He didn't respond the way they all did. He didn't react with hunger or guilt or fascination when I dropped my mother's name like a nuclear bomb across the conversation. He didn't stumble over compliments or play the "I was such a fan" card. He didn't even flinch, which made him dangerous, and that made him irresistible. Bo was a screenwriter, one of the real ones. No fake film school credits. No ghostwritten Netflix pilots. No clout chasing on Twitter. Just scripts. Raw, brutal, unflinching. Dark shit. Movies that got under your skin and made you hate yourself for watching. The kind of stories that didn't sell unless someone brave or stupid took a chance. He was smart. Quiet. Intense. Younger than the men I usually circled, maybe 35. He had a stare like a scalpel. A voice like velvet soaked in whiskey. His success wasn't loud. It wasn't dripping in gold watches or obnoxious shoes. It was understated. Lurking. Like he knew how powerful he was, but didn't need you to know. We met at a rooftop dinner thrown by one of Grant's investor friends. A table full of fake laughs and surgically frozen smiles, women in dresses that cost more than rent, men who smelled like Versace and middle-aged crisis. I was already bored before the appetizers hit the table. Bo sat at the far end, alone, nursing a bourbon, not talking to anyone, just watching, like a sniper. I caught his gaze once, held it for a beat, then looked away. That was the first mistake. He didn't look away. Later, when the music got loud and people started drifting into smaller conversations, I walked over, casual as always. "You look like you're writing a murder in your head," I said, leaning on the railing next to him. "Maybe I am." He didn't smile. Didn't compliment me. Didn't ask my name. Instead, he just sipped his drink and added, "I write better when I'm slightly disgusted." I raised a brow. And this crowd. Vomit-inducing. I laughed. "You're not wrong. Why are you here?" "Networking." He gave me a long, slow look. "Lying." I blinked. "Excuse me. You're not here to network. You're here to hunt." And just like that, the room tilted. Because he saw me. Really saw me. Not the image. Not the legacy. Me. The predator with blood under her nails pretending she was just here for champagne. I tilted my head. Smiled. "You say that like it's a bad thing." He shrugged. "Not bad. Just dangerous." "To who?" "To the wrong man." "And you? Are you the wrong man?" "No," he said, finishing his drink. "I'm the one who sees it coming. He turned and walked away, leaving me stunned, breathless, and turned the fuck on. No one ever walked away from me first. The next morning, I searched him online. Read every article, every interview, watched YouTube panels where he dissected stories with surgical brilliance. He spoke like every word had been sharpened before it left his mouth. No filler, no bullshit, and something inside me snapped to attention. I needed to break him, not because I hated him, but because he resisted me, because he saw behind the mask. And part of me wanted to know if I could still pull the strings when the puppet didn't want to dance. I messaged him, one line, still slightly disgusted, or have I grown on you? Hours passed, no response. Then finally, still deciding, that became our pattern. Short texts, sparse replies, cryptic banter that always felt like it meant more than it said. We didn't meet again for a week. Then two. When we finally did, it wasn't at some red carpet event or private dinner. It was at a bookshop in Silver Lake. He'd told me he was doing a talk. I showed up uninvited. He spotted me in the crowd. Didn't acknowledge it, but his eyes lingered. After the event, I walked up to him and said, "So this is where the magic happens." He looked at me, expression unreadable. "You're still playing a character." I raised a brow. "What character?" "The one you think men want." "And what is that?" He stepped closer. "A fantasy with sharp edges. Someone who looks like sex but smells like danger." I blinked. He was reading me like a fucking diary. And it terrified me. Not because I was losing control, but because I wanted him to keep going. "You think you know me?" I asked. He nodded. "You want to be seen, but only through bulletproof glass." He invited me for coffee. Not wine. Not dinner. Coffee. A sober decision in a city drunk on bad ones. I went. We talked for hours. About art. Shame. Fear. He didn't try to fuck me. Didn't lean in close. Just stared at me like I was a riddle he hadn't solved yet. And the truth. I didn't know how to handle it. I started craving his approval. His insight. His silences. I started needing to be the exception in his eyes. The one who could sit at the table without being devoured or dismissed. But he made me work for it. He didn't chase. Didn't praise. He challenged. He'd say things like, "You're too good to be this bitter," or "You wear your mother like armor, but it's cutting you too." And those words, they got under my skin, because they weren't compliments. They were truths. And I wasn't used to being undressed without being touched. One night, I finally asked him, "Why haven't you tried to sleep with me?" He looked up, eyes heavy. "Because I want to know you. And I think if I fuck you, I'll never get the chance." That hit me like a bullet, because he wasn't wrong. Sex, for me, was control. Power. A transaction I knew how to dominate. But with him, it would have been surrender. And I wasn't ready for that. So I pulled away. Started texting other men. Ghosting him. Testing if he'd chase. He didn't. Not once. And that broke me in ways I didn't expect. I realized something terrifying. Bo Maddox was the first man I couldn't manipulate. Because he didn't want anything from me. Not sex. Not status. Not Nikki Nova's shadow. He just wanted me to be real. And the fucked up truth? I didn't know how. So I did what I always did. I weaponized the pain. I slept with another writer, one of Bo's colleagues, and made sure he found out. Posted a picture with a caption that oozed passive aggression. Something poetic and petty. I don't even remember what it said. But I remember his response. Silence. Not anger. Not jealousy. Disappointment. And that gutted me. Because I hadn't just failed to seduce him. I'd failed to reach him. And for the first time since I started playing this game, I didn't feel like the predator. I felt like the little girl in the bathroom, crying over a vending machine insult, waiting for someone who'd already left. Except this time, I was the one walking away. I told myself he was weak, that he didn't deserve me, that he didn't understand how to play. But somewhere deep down, I knew the truth. He wasn't weak. He was real. And I wasn't ready for real. Not yet, because to be real, you have to take off the mask. And I hadn't even looked at my face in years. Chapter 6, The Price of Being Her. There's a moment in every performance when you forget you're acting. When the script fades and the costume becomes your second skin. When you've said the lines so many times, you don't know where the role ends and you begin. That's when it gets dangerous. That's when it stops being pretend. That's when the mask fuses to your face. That's what happened to me. Somewhere between the champagne toasts, the fake numbers, the seductions, the subtle takedowns, the careful manipulations, I stopped knowing who the fuck I was. I became the version of myself I'd created. The daughter of Nikki Nova. The myth. The siren. The villain in lace. but there was a cost. And it came slow, like a leak in a sinking ship. One crack, then two, then everything starts to drown. I should have seen the signs. The nights I couldn't sleep without wine in my veins. The way I flinched when someone touched me, even gently. The increasing need to check my reflection, just to remember who I was trying to be that day. I started waking up in strange apartments, with strange men whose names I didn't care to remember, staring at the ceiling like it held the answers to all the questions I'd spent years trying not to ask. Who are you without the act? Who are you without the legacy? Who are you without her? I didn't know. And worse, I didn't want to know, because knowing meant undoing everything. It meant peeling back every layer of armor I'd forged from shame, sex, and survival. It meant looking in the mirror and seeing more than a silhouette draped in seduction. It meant facing the girl underneath, the child I had buried under heels and sarcasm, the girl who used to cry when her mother forgot her birthday, the girl who used to press her ear to the bathroom door, listening to the sounds of strangers fucking her mother for money, wondering if love was always that loud. The girl who used to stare at family photos in other kids' houses like they were magic she'd never get to touch. That girl still lived inside me, and she was screaming, but I wasn't listening. Not yet. Instead, I doubled down. More events. More name drops. More affairs. I became a brand of my own, a whispered rumor, a headline waiting to happen. There were articles now. Blogs. Speculation. Is Nikki Nova's daughter the new face of feminist seduction? Hollywood's new dark angel. Aurora Nova has men on their knees. One even called me a walking retribution fantasy. And I let them, because I'd rather be feared than forgotten. But the power started to rot. It wasn't enough to make men want me. I needed them to fall apart after me, to self-destruct, to lose sleep, money, careers. I didn't just want to be seen, I wanted to be felt. I wanted to leave bruises on egos and burns in reputations. I wanted to be the woman they warned each other about in locker rooms and boardrooms. She's a fucking landmine. She'll ruin you. Don't touch her unless you're ready to bleed. And they still touched me, because danger is addicting. And I played the part like I was born for it. But inside, I was unraveling, waking up with makeup smeared, messages from people I didn't remember texting, offers I couldn't track. Every morning felt like hangover amnesia. Every night ended in another performance. And then came the headlines I didn't control. One article suggested I'd been blackmailing producers for access. Another leaked a sex tape I hadn't even known existed, shot on a phone, with shitty lighting, during one of my power plays with a junior exec who begged to be used like a human ATM. I watched it, alone, in silence. And for the first time, I didn't see power. I saw a woman who looked like me, but felt hollow. The way I looked at the camera, the way I laughed, the way I moved, it wasn't seduction. It was survival. A fucked up pantomime of control. I didn't cry. Not then. Not yet. Instead, I stared at the screen, numb, trying to piece together how I'd gotten here. Not the daughter of a porn star, but the ghost of one. Because that's what I'd become. A fucking echo. Everything I hated in my mother, I had replicated. The recklessness. The manipulation. The dependency on being desired. The way she made herself a fantasy because she never believed she was enough without it. And I had inherited it. Not in DNA. In damage. The next time I saw my reflection, I didn't recognize it. Literally. I was in the bathroom of some overpriced lounge in Beverly Hills, wiping lipstick off my teeth, when I caught myself mid-glance and flinched. My eyes were too wide. Too tired. Like they'd seen something that couldn't be unseen. I touched my face gently. Like it wasn't mine. Like I was scared I'd smudge the illusion. Then I whispered out loud, "Who the fuck are you?" No answer. Just the sound of a toilet flushing behind me, and the echo of stilettos on marble. I went home that night. Alone. No distractions. No wine. No men. Just silence. And it hit me all at once like a car I didn't hear coming. I wasn't playing the game anymore. I was the game. And I didn't know the rules. I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know how to be anything else. Because this version of me, the one I had created, curated, crafted, was the only one the world cared about. Without her, I was nothing. And that thought, it didn't scare me. It paralyzed me. I laid in bed that night, staring at the ceiling, my phone glowing with unread messages, offers, invitations, dirty promises wrapped in dollar signs. I didn't answer any of them. For the first time, I didn't want to. Because I realized something dark. Something ugly. Something that sank into my stomach, and refused to let go. I had become the very thing I swore I never would. not my mother's daughter, but her legacy, the same addiction to power, the same reliance on being wanted, the same ache when the spotlight starts to fade. And maybe that's the real curse. Not the name, not the fame, but the hunger. The endless fucking hunger to be more than you are. To fill the void with anything, attention, sex, danger. So you don't have to hear the sound of your own loneliness. That's what she died with. And if I wasn't careful, that's how I'd die too. Chapter 7, Final Fuck You. There's a strange kind of silence before destruction. Not peace, not calm, just stillness. Like the moment before a scream, or the second before impact, when the brakes have already failed and your hands are off the wheel. That's the kind of silence I felt walking into the Roosevelt that night. Heels sharp as knives, black dress hugging my body like it knew the war I was about to wage. I could hear my own breath. Every step against that glossy marble floor echoed like a countdown in my ears. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't scared. I was ready. This wasn't about seduction anymore. Not about getting a man to beg or fall or fuck me into thinking I had power. This was vengeance. A full circle reckoning. And at the center of it, Vincent Carrington. A man so high up the Hollywood food chain, he didn't even chew his meals anymore. He swallowed careers whole, models, actresses, writers, stylists. Anyone too hungry, too naive, or too desperate to say no. The man was slime in a tailored suit. A parasite with an IMDb page longer than most people's resumes. He also happened to be my mother's first real love. Or at least, that's what she called him. Right before she overdosed in our bathroom 2 months ago. You didn't know that part, huh? Yeah, Nikki Nova, dead on a cold tile floor. Mascara like war paint, mouth still curled into a half smirk like she died mid-sentence. No note. No goodbye. Just a final scene she didn't get to direct. When I found her body, the first thing I felt wasn't grief. It was fury. Because I knew who broke her. Vincent fucking Carrington. He used her. Promised her more than dick and drugs and fake roles in fake scripts. Promised her something real. Then ghosted her when she turned 30, and the industry decided her tits sagged too much for prime time. She spiraled. Tried to bounce back. But you don't bounce in porn, you shatter. So yeah, that night at the Roosevelt, that was for her. I spotted him the second I entered the ballroom. Surrounded by sycophants and silicon, swirling scotch in a crystal glass like it made his lies taste better. His hair was still slicked, still dyed the same phony shade of power black. His skin was tight, too tight, and his smile was the kind that should come with a trigger warning. He didn't recognize me. Not at first. I walked right up to him, bold as a bullet. "Vincent," I purred. "You look exactly the same." He turned, eyes flickering across my face, my legs, my cleavage. Trying to place me. I could see the calculation behind his lashes. Had he fucked me before? Had he seen me in a casting call? A private party? A sex tape? Then it clicked. "Aurora," he breathed. "Nikki's girl." His voice was warm honey dipped in poison. "That's right," I smiled. "All grown up." He smiled back, slow and predatory. "You've become quite something. You have no idea." He bought me a drink. Of course he did. Sat me at his private table, just far enough from the crowd to feel exclusive, but still within earshot of envy. He asked about my life, my goals, my projects. He never once mentioned my mother, and I never mentioned what was in my purse. A burner phone, two tiny cameras, and a USB drive with every dirty secret he ever texted, sexted, or whispered to the wrong intern after midnight. I'd spent the last 2 months infiltrating every pocket of his empire, seducing his assistants, flirting with his tech guy, sleeping with his accountant. All roads led to Vincent, and now I had the receipts. But I didn't want to just expose him. That would have been too easy. I wanted to ruin him. So I played the part. Laughed at his stories. Touched his arm at the right moments. Dropped the name Nikki, just often enough to stir that dead guilt inside him. I saw it, just a flicker. A twitch in the corner of his eye. A ghost he hadn't buried properly. Then I leaned in. "You know," I said softly, "she still loved you. Even at the end." He blinked. "Hard. She said you were the only man who ever made her feel like she wasn't just a body." He swallowed. "She was special. She died with your name on her lips." His hand trembled. "Just slightly. Did you know she kept the first script you wrote together? The one with the time-traveling hooker? She said it was the only time someone saw her as more than just fuckable." He looked away. "I found it," I whispered. "Framed it." Silence stretched like a wire between us. I let it hum for a beat, then reached into my purse. "No cameras," he said, half laughing. "This is off the record." "Oh, don't worry. It's not for you. I placed the burner phone on the table, slid it toward him. Press play. He frowned, but did it. And there it was. His voice. Crystal clear. From a year ago. Threatening a 19-year-old assistant with NDA lawsuits if she didn't massage the stress out of his weekend. Promising her a role in a Netflix pilot that never existed. Telling her to wear red lipstick and no fucking panties. His eyes widened. His jaw clenched. What the fuck is this? Insurance, I said. He looked up at me like I'd just unzipped his skull. You're blackmailing me? No, I said calmly. I'm ending you. Then I leaned in, so close he could taste the venom on my breath. You broke my mother. You left her to rot in a motel room while you played king of your plastic empire. She gave you her trust, her body, her youth. And you traded her for newer meat and forgot she ever existed. He stood, voice rising. You don't know what you're talking about. Don't I? I whispered. I clicked the tiny remote in my other hand, and behind me on the ballroom screen, the slideshow shifted. His face. His voice. One video after another. The room fell into stunned silence. He froze. Dozens of Hollywood's most powerful people watched him confess. Threaten. Grope. Manipulate. And in the final clip, he laughed, full-throated, vile, about how the slut with the fake tits OD'd like a good whore should. That was my mother. Nikki. And those were his fucking last words about her. The room erupted. Gasps. Phones out. People whispering, backing away, turning cold. He spun toward me, wild-eyed. You little bitch. You have no idea what you've done. Oh, but I do, I said. I turned. Walked. Left him there in the ruins of his empire. Left him to drown in the very filth he'd built his name on. The press picked it up within the hour. Hashtag Carrington canceled trended by midnight. By morning, studios dropped him. Lawyers called. Victims came forward. And me. I disappeared. Vanished like smoke, like a ghost that never really belonged in the light. I moved to the coast. Changed my number. Got a job at a dive bar, where no one knew my name. No more red carpets. No more champagne lies. Sometimes I still hear her voice. My mother. Whispering in the dark. Never let a man fuck you unless you're getting paid or getting even. I got both. So here's to you, Nikki Nova. Porn queen. Tragic mother. Broken woman. You gave me your name. Your curse. And I turned it into your revenge. Final fuck you, Vincent. Final fuck you, Hollywood. I hope you choke on it.